May I now request the National Security Advisor, Sri Shiv Shankar Menon, to release the report and deliver his address.
Dr. Arvind Gupta, DGIDSA, Sri Nitin Desai, Chairman of the Task Force, members of the Task Force, ladies and gentlemen, friends, these are not mutually exclusive categories. I'm delighted to have been asked to release the IDSA Task Force report on India's cyber security challenge. The wealth of experience and expertise in the task force is truly impressive, as is the quality of the report that you have produced. So I'd like to thank IDSA and the task force members right at the outset for this very useful initiative. It's also very topical because it comes just when government is in the final stages of attempting to prepare a sort of whole of government approach to our cybersecurity architecture. It's also a time when in the general public, I think there's considerable and increasing concern about in the strategic community, in the general public, about cybersecurity. So your timing is also perfect. I think it's clear that our dependence on cyberspace and the internet is growing exponentially. We know the figures for India. Over 2 years ago, there were over 100 million internet connections in India. If you add to that the 381 million mobile phone subscriptions, which are also internet enabled, you know, and this is 2 years ago, and you look at the rate these things are growing at, you and I depend on the internet, cyberspace for our daily lives, for in our work, in all sorts of ways. So, and it's therefore natural that public concern is rising about whether this space, this instrument that they find so essential, is safe. Partly because the weight of anecdotal evidence, which is growing about cyber war, about cyber attacks, Stuxnet, this I just mentioned, Ghostnet, all these appear to the ordinary citizen as sort of unseen forces having apparently magical effects over incredible distances. And so in a sense, it's a fear of the unknown as well, because most people lack conceptual framework in which to understand and deal with these issues. And this is the first reason why I think it's so useful to have a report like this, because it helps to increase understanding of the issue and of cybersecurity and of what we should be doing in this area. And I'm particularly glad that you have a report that the layman can understand and read. This is very important because this is a field which is rife with jargon and technical terms. The other reason for public anxiety and concern that we is really the anarchic nature of this domain, glimpses of which cause alarm to the ordinary person. Maybe not so much to the military mind, but certainly to most other people. When this is combined with the potential effects of malicious attacks, whether banking, power supplies, again, Mr. Desai mentioned some of these, railways, air traffic control, it's only natural that people should be worried. Nor do, quite frankly, the experts help to allay these concerns in our choice of terms to describe these phenomena. We speak of cybercrime. When these acts are not traditional law and order problems or crimes in the old sense, nor can they be dealt with as such, thanks to problems of attribution, the lack of legal frameworks, the lack of the means for enforcement and for punishments. We also use the word cyber war very loosely, even though conflict or attacks in the cyber world do not follow the rules or logic of war as we have known it in other domains. In this new domain of contention, war, espionage, surveillance, control, and traditional security functions, activities, and crimes occur but in each case they differ considerably from what we are used to. So we have to unlearn some of the lessons that we have learnt in the past. For instance, traditional deterrence hardly works in this battle space. Because in the cyber world where operations and attacks occur almost at the speed of light, there is a premium on attacking first, on offense. The effects of ICT on warfare are evident. I mean, we've seen a huge revolution in military affairs since the early 90s, and we've seen it all around us, whether it's in control, command and control, in surveillance, in communications, in cyber operations, which have kinetic effects in the real world. But it's also had a whole series of other effects. It's brought power to non-state actors and to individuals, empowered small groups, including terrorists. It has given small groups and individuals the ability and the means to threaten and act against much larger, much more complex, and much more powerful groups. And since the technology is now accessible or available widely and is mostly held in private hands, ICT has redistributed power within states. We see the practical effects of this, of these changes all around us. Look at the social and political effects of the new technologies and the turmoil in West Asia. You have a cocktail of social media, of 24-hour television, NGOs, special forces, which can create a virtual reality and then lead to actual effects in the real world. These are not just law and order problems or defense problems in the conventional sense, and they are not amenable to traditional responses that states are used to. We have seen technology place increasingly lethal power in the hands of non-state actors, and the effects can range from the benign to the dangerous, because the technology itself, quite frankly, is value neutral. In West Asia today, we see its use by popular movements to mobilize people and influence opinion against regimes across the Arab world. Autocratic regimes across the world now take the power of ICT very seriously. Equally, intelligence and espionage increasingly rely on what are euphemistically called national technical means, namely cyber penetration and surveillance. And the same technologies also empower the state in terms of its capacity for internal surveillance, interception, and so on. And their power and reach raise fundamental issues about the lines that a democratic society like ours must draw between the collective right to security and the individual's right to privacy. And what makes this more complicated is the fact that these technologies are not just available to the state, where laws and policies and regulations can control and limit their use. They're also widely available in the public domain, where commercial and individual motives can easily lead to misuse that's not so easily regulated, unless we rethink and update our legal and other approaches. Between states, information technologies and their effects have made asymmetric struggles much more effective and attractive. In situations of conventional imbalance between states, we see that asymmetric strategies are increasingly common, and cyber war, anti-satellite capabilities are uses of technology by a weaker state to neutralize or raise the cost and deter the use of its military strength by a stronger country. In the name of defense, all the major countries are developing offensive cyber capabilities as well as using cyber espionage. So are smaller powers who see ICT as an equalizer. One estimate speaks of about 120 countries developing the capacity for cyber warfare. But by its nature, as WikiLeaks showed, the threats in this domain are not just from states. These technologies have also enabled individuals and small groups, and we in India know, we seem to be the subject of unwelcome attention from many of them, whether state or non-state. Government are in the process of putting in place the capabilities and the systems in India that will enable us to deal with this anarchic new world of constant and undeclared cyber threat, attack, counterattack, defense. We need to prepare to deal with both threats to cyberspace and risks arising through cyberspace. This will be a step towards what the task force report rightly calls for, a coherent and comprehensive cybersecurity policy. While in our case, we have institutions tasked to deal with the protection of critical cybersecurity infrastructure, other institutions like CERTIN, for instance, which have proved their worth during the Commonwealth Games and so on in defending our open civil systems. We also need to put in place a system of certification responsibility for telecommunications equipment, and we are working on the protocols and the procedures which will do so. We need to harden our critical networks, and we will develop metrics to certify and assure that critical cyber networks, equipment, and infrastructure are secure. So we have a huge agenda, and most important, we need to create a climate and an environment within which security is built into our cyber and communications working methods, finding ways to indigenize what we can, whether it's manpower, whether it's technology, whether it's equipment. So as your report rightly points out, this clearly has to be more than just a whole of government effort. It must include the entire scientific, technological strength of the country, whether in labs, whether in universities, or in the private sector, in firms. I therefore welcome the main recommendations of the task force as a useful contribution to the evolution of national cybersecurity policy. There's only one part of the task force report which I personally might have a difference of emphasis. It speaks of global internet governance and of the need for a proactive diplomatic policy on cybersecurity, and seems to suggest that multilateral efforts for international internet governance are useful. The report itself recognizes that most proposals for international internet governance are thinly masked efforts to control or shape the internet, and that some are ideologically driven. Now, intergovernmental rules of the road are certainly desirable, and nobody can argue against them, like motherhood. But in my personal view, we must be clear that they will not have practical effect or be followed unless they're in the clear self-interest of those who should be following them. And therefore, let us, at least in India, concentrate on putting our own house in order. And that should be our first priority. One final point. I do hope that the task force report will also bring some reason and some sense of balance and proportion into our discussion of cybersecurity. To cite one example, there's invariably, as Ms. Desai mentioned, a big hullabaloo when one of our websites is hacked. But websites are meant to be hit. You measure the success of a website by the number of hits that it gets. So when a website is defaced by hackers, as happened to the CBI website, it's not necessarily a security breach, though it might offend your pride. It seems to me that it's actually a compliment. But it also seems to me that our own resources, limited as they are, would be better used to defend and harden our critical cyber infrastructure, expanding what is secure from the known to the unknown. And the task force suggestions on how we should do so are indeed very, very useful. I therefore have no hesitation in commending the central messages of the task force report to those interested in cybersecurity in India as we work together to strengthen India's cyber defenses. Thank you. Thank you very much.